sitting in the railway station, got a ticket for my destination. On a tour of one night stands, my suitcase and guitar in hand, and every stop is neatly planned for a poet and a one man band. Homeward bound, I wish I was homeward bound, home where my thoughts escape.
Hello everyone, welcome to Everton Business Matters, Series 4, Episode 6. My name is Roger Armstrong, for those of you who don't know. And as usual, I'm with my co-conspirators, the other two members of the Funboy 3, Paul the Esk and John Blaine. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hello, gents.
Good morning to both of you.
John, I know you're still hot and sweaty, which is an image many people won't now be able to shake from their mind's eye. From a morning internal bicycle ride. Congratulations on that. Now, we've called this special EBM because apparently there is some news which may have escaped me in its significance, or maybe I'm mistaken for not having spotted that significance, that there has been a development on the planning application in at Liverpool City Council for the wonderful new stadium on the banks of the Royal Blue Mersey at Bramley Moor Dock. So my question coming straight to you, Paul, is what's that news and what's all the fuss about?
Okay, I think, well, first of all, the news is that the planning application will be heard by Liverpool City Council Planning Committee on Tuesday the 23rd of February. So after months and months of speculation and delays, some of which is caused by the City Council, some of which obviously is caused by the pandemic, and also has to be said, some of which is has been caused by the multiple changes that have been made to the application since the original application went in December 2019. We actually have a date in which the planning application will be put before the committee. So that's the first piece of news. The second piece of news is that the planning officer that has responsibility for this application is making the recommendation to the planning committee that approval be given, subject to any comments that the Secretary of State may wish to make, having reviewed it.
And remind us which Secretary of State that is. Is it Jenrick or Dowden?
It's Jenrick. Yeah.
Okay. But Dowden, you know, sports and culture and seemingly the world's biggest football fan, is he going to have a little bit of sway on this as well?
Not to my knowledge, no, because this is purely a planning application. So
okay.
What he would be looking at is, does the granting approval of this application, is it consistent with national planning policy? Has everybody taken into account all the various aspects, and indeed has everybody taken into account all the objections that still sit with this application?
Okay, and that date again is the 23rd of February, so next week, right?
Yeah, next Tuesday.
And are we encouraging Blues to get down to the council offices with scarves and banners and klaxons to show our support, or should we just hold fire on that?
There's a pandemic going on, Roger.
Oh, okay. So we can't do it remotely. Not even under the rule of six, we couldn't get down there and sing a few songs, no?
Technically, people can apply to attend the meeting, though.
Okay. So
the meeting is going to be streamed live.
Yeah.
Oh, it is. So when you say attend, that's watch.
Sorry, I view the activities, not attend as in contribute, but see what's going on and listen. As Paul just said, it's going to be streamed live, yeah.
You can actually, I mean, it's...
You can apply to attend and comment, can't you, if you want?
It is a public meeting, and it's...
That's right, yeah.
To anybody to ask to have either 5 minutes if they're speaking in support of, or 3 minutes if they're speaking against the application.
Yeah. So you could apply, Roger, go on the Liverpool City Council website and say, I'd like to, you know, because the football club itself will be obviously presenting per se, yeah. Colin Chong's doing that, I think, isn't he, Paul?
Denise
and Colin, I guess, because yeah. Denise wouldn't go without Colin on this, I wouldn't have thought. Maybe Richard will be there, I don't know. But yes, we could have the opportunity as individuals to speak if we wanted to, yeah.
Okay.
And so the selectors, because I guess there's a limit on it as well, Roger. So
the planning officer has recommended it for approval. Is that significant, or is that just was always going to happen?
I think, well, we three sit here and people are listening, hopefully. It's not, I mean, you started off with your intro, Roger, about is it a story? Probably not, in the sense that, isn't it what we expected? I mean, the gestation of this thing. Yeah, the gestation of this thing has been so long, and it's been known for so long that it's likely, at least by Liverpool City Council, to be approved. So this is just another station on the journey down to the Royal Blue Mersey, isn't it, that we have to stop at and have a chat and then move on. So I don't think it's a surprise that the planning officer, Mr. Jones, I think, isn't it, is recommending approval. I guess that makes it sort of a procedural default that it needs to be approved unless objections are raised on the day that changed the mind of the committee itself to accept that recommendation.
Because I've noticed quite a bit of, cheeriness and almost, brilliant. We've kind of done it, almost triumphalism about this decision. But it's not really a significant milestone that we've crossed, Paul. It doesn't sound like it.
Well, it's significant in the sense that it has to happen in order for the stadium to happen. So it's significant from that point of view. And it is also significant. And I'm going to try and strike a balance here. I think there's been understandably, there's been a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of excitement shown in terms of the fact that the planning officer has recommended approval. But I think there's been some inaccuracies as well in terms of how it's been reported since, that somehow the club has overcome the objections of those that object.
That's
not strictly true in the sense that those people that want to object are still objecting.
Yeah, but surely the way the process works, Paul, is that you prepare your application, you submit your application, you go through a period of public consultation. I don't mean the football club now, I mean the planning, therefore the city council. Individuals and other organisations are allowed to object, and we've all seen those little things that come through your letterbox or are posted on bloody lampposts saying this is going to happen and this is how you review and object and all that sort of stuff. But the planning officer's given due consideration to all of that and has recommended approval. So we have sort of, at least in the eyes of the planning officer, overcome the objections of, what was it, the Victorian Society and Historic England.
And UNESCO.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, UNESCO are there, but front of house are the two feet on the ground, aren't they? But the fact that they have made their objections and the planning officer is recommending approval, and other than some extraordinary event, Liverpool City Council will ratify that approval, and then it will go to the Secretary of State for Housing, Communities, Local Government, blah, blah, in generic. And I do think he'll speak to his colleagues, the sporting guy, Roger, but, yeah. But not in a formal sense, I wouldn't have thought. But to say they, if it's the applicant, which is the football club, have not overcome the objections is probably not right, is it? Because they've got the planning officer to recommend approval.
Well, maybe I'm dancing on the head of a pin here. It's not for the planning officer to overcome the objections. It's for the planning officer to look at the case for and the objections.
No, I didn't.
Just hang on.
Yeah,
and make a balanced view on which side of the argument carries at the end of the day. What I'm saying is that it seemed to me that reading local media reports, listening to certain podcasts since, reading various and also the Liverpool Echo one, we'd overcome the objections, i.e. the people that were objecting were no longer objecting. That is not the case. The case is the objections will still be there. And in fact, the objectors are asking the City Council to not only ask the Secretary of State to review, but also they're still asking for it to be called in. Now, whether it will be called in or not is a different matter, because you know they're just expressing their view in as much as the club and the city council are expressing their view. But it's not right to say that the objections have sort of been, they've been dismissed in the sense that the decision has been made, but the objections still stand. And until the process is fully gone through, you can't say accurately that those objections don't carry weight.
Well, I'm going to miss it. I mean, it's that head of a pin, rather, that you say you're dancing on. I mean, I've not seen or listened to whatever podcast The Echo did, but I don't think the one, because I was on the one with Preno and Dave Witch, I don't think that said that they've stopped objecting. I think it said that...
Well, they said that they've overcome the objections. And
In getting the planning officer to recommend approval, they have, because the planning officer's independent and he's looked at both sides and he's concluded that the benefits, I guess, to the local area and to the community outweighs the heritage concerns. Fundamentally, that's where we're at. But you are quite right, of course. You then go to the next stage, which is going to take place on Tuesday, 9:45, when the committee itself either has to ratify that recommendation or do something else. And when they ratify it, and I think they will, don't you, then the Secretary of State will say, you know, this is a significant development. It has impacts outside of the local area, potentially. I don't know. Don't know what the justification would be. And then he may look at it more closely and spend 3 weeks deciding what to do after that. So we're talking about, what, beginning of March, mid-March, before this crystallises into, yes, get on with it, guys, or something else needs to happen.
Can I just jump in? Because obviously I take your respective positions here, but whenever I read about this project of Bramley Moor Dock, it isn't just Bramley Moor Dock. It seems to all be grouped together in the creation and construction of this state-of-the-art iconic stadium, which may or may not still be iconic, I'm not sure. But it's also and a community-led legacy project at Goodison Park. Are these two applications or are they inextricably linked? Does approval of one lead to the other? How do they actually fit together, the redevelopment of Goodison, that community-led legacy project, and the Bramley Moor Dock construction?
Okay, so there's actually four applications. So there's the main application for the stadium.
Right.
There's two sort of secondary applications relating to some of the enabling works that need to happen around the site before work can start. So they're all being sort of grouped together, and then and that needs absolute approval for anything to happen.
Yes,
and
right.
then what's being asked for in terms of Goodison Park is outline approval, so that in principle it can go ahead, but obviously they have to go back to the council at some point in the future with a more defined plan, and there's a time limit being put on that, which is going to be 3 years after. So they will have to have full planning permission within 3 years of either the first Premier League game being played or first team game being played at Goodison at Bramley Moor, or an event in which more than 10,000 people attend Bramley Moor. So,
okay, are they all linked? Roger?
It could be the case that put it this way: Goodison Park is dependent on Bramley Moor, but Bramley Moor is not dependent upon Goodison Park. I think that's the accurate way of saying it.
Yeah, I think you're right, Paul. The legacy is part of the body of evidence about why this is good for the community. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, fine. So there's been a green light given by the planning officer. There's a meeting next week, which we expect to fully ratify that decision. So from Liverpool City Council perspective, it's all systems go. That will then require a nod from Jenrick, or how long is that process likely to take, do we think? And What is or is not calling in, John?
Well, he has 3 weeks, or his department has, because it won't be Jenrick who does it. It'll be the permanent, you know, the civil servants who will review. Predominantly, I think a lot of that will be a review of process and have they done the right things, of checks and balances and those sorts of things. And then that, I guess, and I don't know, I'll use the word because I'm not sure if it's the right one, but the determination that will pop out of that fundamentally becomes, you know, for people of our age and remembering what happened at Kirby and other places, I guess if you there's some grey, but the black and white, Roger, is it gets approved or there's a public inquiry. Yeah.
Right. And a public inquiry could last.
Or it could say no, I guess.
It could say no. Yeah. But yeah. A public inquiry would what, add 6, 9, 12 months to the timeline?
I would imagine I'll just throw it out there. It potentially kills it. Yeah. Because you're talking about it, well, a year. I don't know. Paul, what do you think? If they suddenly decided to fire up a public inquiry when the country is in the state that it's in, you'd be the other side of a year, I would have thought, Roger. I don't know. I really don't know.
Personally, I don't think it would kill it, but obviously
time kills deals. I mean, you know, so.
it would be very expensive for the club. Personally, I think my own sort of somewhat cynical view will be that the government will review this within.
Yes.
I don't think it will be within 21 days. I think it will be slightly
longer. No, it'll drift. Because, I mean, that's what the statutory term is, but the pandemic and stuff will give them a bit longer. Yeah,
I looked up some research in Planning Magazine, which I'm sure you all subscribe to. It's available at all good bookstores.
Yeah, they'll want some political gain from this as well, won't they?
Yeah, and that said that essentially anything that was going through that part of government is taking twice as long as it would normally take.
Yeah, so 6 weeks.
For obvious reasons. And that there was in terms of something is called in, there's an expectation that it would take 3 months, but in practice, it's taking on average 6 months. And in fact, more than 2/3 of anything that is called in takes longer than 6 months. That's not to say it will be called in. I'm just saying that there will be some time slippage in all probability. But what happens in terms of the review is that the department will look at it and decide whether or not there's anything that needs further than a review, i.e. needs to be called in and looked at in more detail. And if they decide that, then they decide that. If they don't decide that, it goes back to the city council and it's approved.
That's right.
And
sorry, Roger, just a second.
No, go ahead.
Because I don't know whether Paul just lost the train there because he was going to say, call me cynical. Yeah. And when that popped up, my thought was, this government might like to be seen to be the ones who are approving this stadium and then spin a yarn about investing in the Northern powerhouse and all those sorts of things.
There is very much that potential that this is an open goal for the government to leap onto something that actually costs them nothing, but they will actually derive some political benefit from. And of course, that would be very, it wouldn't be a typical behaviour of this government, would it, to do that?
Yeah, but anyone who's ever run a sales campaign of significance, you know who joins the train very late on, don't you?
Oh, yeah. They all jump on at Edge Hill to get to Lime Street, yeah.
I've got a very, I've got an image in the back of my mind, which is almost as disturbing as George Osborne wearing that, holding up that number 11 shirt, that we might see Jenrick with an Everton shirt. And that would be that would be pretty unpleasant. And the Tories do have a history. I understand the Northern powerhouse and the levelling up agenda they seem to have at the moment, but they do have a history of looking unfavourably at new things within Merseyside. So let's see which way the dice rolls this time. So we get approval. Let's just assume we get approval. That's fantastic. And Jenrick ticks the box and everyone's happy. Are we ready to put a spade in the ground then? Have we got everything ready logistically? And crucially, what about financing, Paul?
Okay, I think there will be a symbolic spade in the ground.
I
can see Farhad and I can see Bill fighting over a B&Q spade on the cobbles of Bramley Moor, which will be quite amusing. obviously there's going to be some imagery around that and stuff like that. But in practice, what happens next is we have to complete the purchase of the land.
Yeah.
So that shouldn't take a huge amount of time, but that has to be done. And of course, finance has to be completed, and all of the money doesn't need to be in the bank, obviously, on day one. But we need to be able to tell the contractor, where our funding is coming from, and at what point in the next 3 years, the different parts of the funding arrives.
In fact, the final price from the construction companies as well, don't they? I mean, that was actually around now. Must be close to being ready, mustn't it? Because they're still trying to aim for a fixed price type build, aren't they?
They are, and I suspect that's already known, because if you look at the within the planning application, there's an estimate of build cost of $505 million.
That's right, yeah. But I think I've got this vague recollection. Someone told me they were seeking to pin that down back end of January, early February with Langs. So again, that will, those dominoes start tumbling, basically, don't they, Roger?
Yeah. The interesting thing, sorry, Roger, just to come back on that. So if you look at that $505 million build cost, that's put in to the planning application as a benefit to the city. If you actually look further into those figures and you work out how much of that $505 million is actually spent in the city, then it's a slightly different figure. And if you just excuse me for 1 second, I will tell you exactly what the figure is.
Because people won't be able to sleep if they're listening to this at night without knowing what the number is.
But no, it's important, because if you say, for example, the stadium is going to cost £500 million, and everybody thinks, oh, that's great, it's £500 million that's going to go into the local economy. But £100 million of it is spent with a steel company.
Well, that's what I was about to say, yeah. Yeah,
city sees no benefit for that £100 million. So
I appreciate that.
These figures are actually very high, and I think the club, I am both critical but also supportive of the club. I think the club needs to be congratulated on this. More than £255 million, so more than half of the build cost, is going to go through the local supply chain.
Yeah.
So that's quite significant for a city of the size of Liverpool. And more than £32 million of costs, in addition to that, will be local labour.
Yeah, I was going to say, there'll be a big chunk of labour, which must be, it'll probably be 10%-ish by the time the thing washes through. But you're talking about 60% is local to the region, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. And then obviously you've got all of the other sort of like ripple benefits around, in terms of all the businesses that aren't associated with Bramley Moor, aren't associated with Everton, but will benefit from the fact that people are spending money in the city during the construction. So the hotel industry, local service industries around Bramley Moor will benefit from day one. That's, I think it's important to say.
Yeah, and we'll see whether the phrase we used to use on this of bookending the developments of Liverpool Waters, then pushing inwards on the 10 streets, whether all then become more likely or get accelerated. And, absence in any debate about all of this is obviously the resting mayor. So
that's an interesting point, John, because actually, again, if you read the whole application, it actually confirms something that I've said previously, this bookending idea that by building at Bramley Moor, it will accelerate growth around the other northern docks, so Nelson Dock, etc., is absolutely not true. The phased development of Liverpool Waters will continue just as it was before. And the phased development means that they will work out from Princess Dock northwards. So even though Bramley Moor will be, on the basis that it will be built and completed by 2024, it's still not anticipated that Nelson Dock, for example, will be developed until 2035 to 2040.
We'll see, won't we?
Well, I'm just saying that's what the application says, and that's what that's the evidence that the council are putting before the planning committee.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I think you're right. I think you do in these matters, don't you? A mixture of objective and, I'll use the word, subjective benefits, or hard and soft benefits, and it's one that humans will not have much difficulty believing that intuitively, if you put a significant development at one end of a development and the intention is always to fill in between, there must be some positive impact. You can't quantify it or qualify it particularly, but there should be, particularly if infrastructure sort of gets put in place around transport and things like that.
So just coming back to finance.
That's why I say it, because we know, go on, use that phrase, Paul, if you've read the document. That is still a soft underbelly, isn't it?
There's not a huge amount of evidence that there's a huge amount of infrastructure spend.
Yeah.
Everton have committed to, you know, various aspects of infrastructure spend, but it's not huge by any matter at all.
It's a soft underbelly, and I think that the objection handling around that is, you know, build it and they will come. Once there is demand, then no doubt some of those infrastructure, particularly around transport challenges, will dilute. But I guess we might not know until much closer, you know, how much of a challenge it's going to be to get to our third new stadium in the city on the banks of the Royal Blue Mersey. But next stop is let's get approval, eh?
So to come back to finance and with the AGM still relatively fresh in mind, how close do you think we are to announcing finance backers, and how much is Farhad going to put into this? Because we've talked at different stages of this process around potentially a rights issue, you know, coming down to some of the smaller shareholders and everyone putting something in. That looks unlikely to happen. Where are we with securing the capital funding for this project?
Is that something you want me to answer?
I was going to say
either of you.
Yeah. Well, I'll have a go when you've had a go, Paul. I'm cool. Yeah.
Go on, John. You're chairman of the Shareholders Association.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've talked about it on the podcast before about it's a good time to borrow money. So I think they believe they have options. I don't know whether the Japanese banks are still interested, whether anything from China would go down politically well in this country at the moment. I do know, because he told me, that Monsieur, he reckons he himself would put 100 million in for the stadium. So that starts to suggest if it is 505, Paul, or remains 505, then the borrowings are going to be what we've always thought they would be in the sense of going to the market. And you probably know better than I whether there's appetite in those sorts of lenders for capital projects like this, being private sector driven ones.
Yeah, it's interesting. Actually, one of the things that the construction cost demonstrates is the bill is going up over time, as you might expect. So, you know, we talked about 500 million as being total cost. Well, we've already spent 39 million. We're spending another 11 million this financial year before the fabled spade in the ground. So we're already probably up to 555 million.
Well, probably nearly 600, I would think. Yeah.
And, you know, that will, even with a fixed price contract, will continue, no doubt, to creep upwards. It's a good time to borrow money. It's a good time to borrow money from the point of view that interest rates are low. And in fact, one of the really interesting things that's happening in the US is that this is slightly technical, but you have a situation where investors in US bonds can see inflation coming around the corner. So US bond yields, that's the rate of interest that you pay on if you lend money to the government, is starting to increase. But at the same time, the yields on corporate debt, i.e. debt that companies use, is falling. So Everton would be considered because of, and this is not a...
this is going to be a risk statement now, is it, Paul?
No, it's not. Everton would be considered sort of junk bond quality in terms of corporate debt. And that's not a negative statement about the club. It's just looking at the size of the business, financial performance, et cetera, et cetera. Junk bond yields are at an historic low at this moment in time. So if the club is able, through JP Morgan, Mitsubishi Bank, for example, the two banks that were advising, to tap this market, which is a market full of high net worth individuals, pension funds, etc., at this moment in time, then it's a very, very good time to do it. So the cost of borrowing, although not as low as, for example, Tottenham's, because Tottenham is considered to be less of a credit risk, would still be extraordinarily good value for the club.
Mm. So you've been a long-term, I suppose, in-the-know type person, because it's just one of the things you're interested in, is funding this thing is going to be difficult, yeah? And yeah. I've got a vague recollection, you might even have suggested in the past that we might get to the stage where we've got all the planning and all that good stuff that we need, and then we decide not to build it for a short while because of Brexit, I think would have been perhaps a reason before, and maybe now it's the pandemic, maybe it's funding, whatever. Go back to a question Roger asked, I guess, a while back. Assuming we get planning approved and we could start building it in the summertime, which is sort of some of the propaganda, isn't it, or the positioning, do you think we will?
Well, I think we will, regardless of whether or not we have the debt fully in place. I think what will happen, obviously, the contractor is going to want to know that all of its costs are covered and will want complete assurance that we can raise the money. But if you look at where's the money in total coming from, debt is probably going to be around 60-70% of the total amount that's raised.
You mean borrowings, yeah?
Yeah. You've got Mashiri's capital investment, which is going to be north of £100 million, which is
in
probably
the end it will
20%.
Be, yeah.
And then you've got sort of naming rights and sponsorship. Clearly, although the club nor nobody in the club has said this to me, USM remain the primary naming rights potential partner by virtue of the fact that they've already
paid for an
option.
Yeah.
I think it would be remiss of me not to say that whilst that's never ever been considered to be a risk, that sort of global political factors,
it might
particularly
be
what's happening in Russia with Putin and what's happening with Navalny in particular, means that there might be at some point a question mark about that, if indeed sanctions were applied by the US government, European government, or the UK government based on Putin's treatment of Navalny.
Mm-hmm.
Navalny being Putin's main political opponent.
Opponents.
That don't know.
He's in prison, isn't he?
Yeah. So that potentially is an issue. And in fact, we're talking about the 23rd of February as being a key date. The day before that, the 22nd, there's a meeting of foreign ministers, European foreign
right,
ministers.
Yeah, I noted that, yeah.
Where they're going to first, you know, they are actually going to talk about Russian sanctions. So it is interesting. What I'm saying is that this is not a slam dunk. I think there's still work to be done. There's work to be done on the debt side of it, financing it. But there's also probably still work to be done with USM. USM can afford to finance this. It's not an issue of them not being able to do so. It's an issue of whether if sanctions were applied, it would be permitted.
You mean finance this from a financing of the naming rights pool, not the whole stadium, of course.
Yes, absolutely. So their element of it is £100-150 million, for example.
Yeah.
There's no issue in terms of affordability, willingness or ability to do this. They can do it. That's not an issue. The issue would be a political issue in terms of if sanctions were applied, would there be capital controls placed on businesses which are ostensibly Russian?
Yeah.
And just coming back to that figure, so 100 million or 150 million, you know, is there any sort of fair value or even fair value market test on, you know, sponsoring a stadium for a team in the bottom half of the Premier League without
top
trophy
half, Roger.
For
top half,
20
we'll
odd
be
years?
Top half, Roger.
Well, top half, bottom half, but you know, no European, no European football, and whatever. My point is, why couldn't USM just come along and go, "We'll give you £350 million for the stadium naming rights in perpetuity"? Is there anything to stop them coming up with that figure, Paul? Any figure?
Well, USM are no longer a connected party to Everton,
right?
So that helps enormously because the level of scrutiny in terms of the naming rights deal, is much less. This is not Manchester City Etihad, for example.
No, precisely.
Where, you know, where there is that clear connection, that connection has been broken, even if the break is a technical break in terms of Mashiri's holding in USM is less than 10%. So that in itself is an important consideration. Frankly, no, it's a question of, you know, how much is this worth to USM?
It's a commercial decision for them, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, how much is it worth to USM? I mean, nothing, really. I mean,
it's up to USM to decide, isn't it?
I know, but come on, boys, come on. USM, I mean, who are they? And what do they do that affects people that are going to see football matches played in their stadium? I mean, I don't see the commercial benefit to USM.
Worldwide media.
Is it a consumer-facing brand primarily?
No, but this is probably where
they... It's PR, really, though, as well, yeah.
Well, it's probably where they use one of their sort of portfolio brands, so...
Telco company or something, yeah.
You know, Megaphone, for example, Metallo Invest, Yota. You know, they've got several consumer-facing brands.
Okay. So we don't see it being called the USM Arena. We see it as the Megaphone Arena or something.
Could be, whatever.
I think if you know, from a marketing point of view, if you wanted maximum exposure, you'd probably say USM Megaphone, for argument's sake.
Okay. And how long will the naming rights deal be for? How long was the option? You know, they have the option to buy the naming rights for what? 20 years, was it?
That's not in the public domain. I don't know what the figure is. I think it would be somewhere between 10 and 20 years.
Okay. Because
I think it will be tied to the debt deal. So
right.
The borrowings, I think the lenders will want to tie those types of commercial relationships. They will want to match the maturities. So
that makes
sense. They'll want first dibs on that, won't they?
Well, they'll have first dibs from a security point of view.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
What typically happens with these with the borrowings is that not all the money is borrowed over the same period of time. So, for example, you know, if you have a mortgage on your house, you borrow however much it is for the full 25 years. What actually happens here is you will have a chunk of the money that's borrowed for 5 years, a chunk of the money that's 10 years, a chunk of the money that's 15 years and 20 years, etc., because different investors will have different time frames on this.
Yeah.
But what you'll find is that the bulk of the money that we borrow to build the stadium will be tied in with the length of the main commercial contracts. So if it's 15 years, if USM are going to have naming rights for 15 years, you'll find that the bulk of the borrowings will be either shorter than or at the same maturity.
Okay, that all makes sense. Let me ask you a slightly facetious question now, both of you, because both of you are renowned commercial negotiators who get good deals, generate lots of revenue, sell at the highest price and buy at the lowest price. Imagine Farhad didn't have a friendship with Big Alisher Usmanov. If you were out there in the corporate sponsorship market trying to flog naming rights for Everton's glorious new stadium, how much do you really think that's worth? What's the maximum you could get, Paul, if I said, right, go and get me a deal, and you said, right, measure me on success, anything greater than X will be an achievement. I will have shown my worth, because I really think the market value for Everton naming rights is 5 million a year, 10 million a year. Where do you think that market is?
I think you'd have to look at comparative stadiums.
Yeah.
So Tottenham were trying to get £20 million a year and got close with both HSBC and Vodafone, but neither deal got over the line, obviously.
And then
you look at West Ham, and you know, West Ham were looking for £6 million and couldn't get £6 million. So the problem in the UK is that there are so few examples of successful naming right relationships where there isn't a connected party that it's almost impossible to put a fair market value on it.
Yeah.
So I actually think that, you know, I don't know what figure would be deemed as successful, to be honest. I think USM is interesting in the sense that Finch Farm and the sponsorship at Goodison as well has put a sort of a market value in there. So, you know, that's what, £12 million a year at this moment in time. You could argue, I think, quite successfully that a brand new stadium in a more iconic location, which will attract many more eyeballs than Goodison Park will, is worth more. So yeah. I think if you couldn't achieve that level, then you're probably doing the wrong job.
Yeah, I wrote a number down when you asked the question, Roger.
Go on then. What is it?
Well, fundamentally, you're asking what the par question is, aren't you?
Yes, so, I am.
Yeah, and so the number I wrote, actually wrote down a number and then wrote down a scribble next to it, yeah, and it's Paul's done the punchline. I thought par was greater than 10 million a year.
So par was 10 million.
Greater than, I put the greater than sign in front of it, so not less than 10 million, so that'd be your rock bottom, per se. And then I scribbled more than the deal we already have, yeah, which, as Paul said, is 12. So, yeah, 10 to 15 million a year. And if you come closer to 10 than 15, then you perhaps have your bosses saying you should have done better.
I mean, it's easy to say, of course.
It's easy to say. As sales guys, we know people on high set targets, which we don't think are achievable. But not less than 10, I would have thought. And it'll get bundled together as well, of course, won't it? But, you know, you've got to believe that how much of this naming right is incremental, yeah, because USM can't sponsor Goodison Park, can it, when it's not there no more?
No, sure. I mean, all I'm saying here is that it shows yet another example of what an absolute blinder Farhad Mashiri's played, because without him and without his money, and I know we've wasted so much of it on bad players and dodgy managers, and you know, but he keeps pouring arguably bad money after good. But without that connection with Usmanov, without that that unconnected connection with Usmanov, and without USM lobbing 30 million in for the option and sponsoring Finch Farm and all kinds of other little things that have happened, you know, he's almost single-handedly through his own private wealth and his own connections, keeping us afloat, which flies in the face, Paul, of him wanting us to be a self-sustaining business. Because the reason I ask that rather facetious question is, without Farhad, we wouldn't be getting anywhere near what we will get for naming rights from USM.
Well, we wouldn't be in a position to build a stadium at Bramley Lane.
Precisely.
We would have. We might have been, it depends on who the other owner would have been if it hadn't been Farhad Mashiri. We could probably comfortably build a stadium out on the East Lancs.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting debate, isn't it? Because we can't do time travel. You know, with a different owner, we might have spent money on players better and have played in the Champions League for the last year or so. And then it would have all been different. But you're right, Roger, fundamentally, this man, for all his potential faults, spending money and pouring potentially good money after bad, which is an indictment in its own right, I suppose, as not being something he doesn't suffer from, is it? So he'll hope one day for a return on that investment, and whether that's glory or, as you suspect, a flip, time will tell.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, 5 years in, is it 5 years now? Yeah, 5 years plus. Are we any closer to being a self-sustaining business? And I would say we're further away than we were when he arrived.
Yeah, I think for two reasons. One, we've spent our inheritance very, very poorly. The inheritance being the money that Mashiri's given us, and secondly, you know, the pandemic has just changed everything. And I think, you know, I still think, to a degree, notwithstanding what I said earlier about the lending and stuff, that the pandemic affects the stadium going forward, and it, you know, must affect the business plan of the stadium going forward. We haven't even yet in this conversation got into what happens once the stadium's been built, but you know, ticket pricing, the ability to sell to corporates in terms of events, in terms of football, etc., will all be affected even in 3 years' time by what's currently happening in terms of the pandemic.
So where are we with ticket pricing then? Let's move on to that. So we've got the planning, that's all lovely, and We got the financing. We got USM lined up to give us a nice big check for naming rights, and Farhad will give us 100 million, and we'll borrow it over, you know, different time frames to suit the capital markets of junk bonds in America. Hopefully, JP Morgan will. There's a nice deal. Everything's going swimmingly. Where are we now in terms of monetizing the stadium on an ongoing basis? So, what's the latest information on ticket pricing compared to the present day, John?
Ticket pricing for the new stadium?
Yeah, absolutely.
They'll be affordable.
Meaning?
No idea. That's all the club have said, isn't it? I think you know my view, and I think I said it on Dave Witcher and or the Bobblecast guys podcast with Dave Prentice. Prices are going to go up substantially. You know, that's my view. The guys I go the match with, who I do my pre-match stuff with, who are all shareholders, are reconciled to it being significantly higher. You know, and I think I said, you know, 50% higher than you're paying now might be the mean, no matter what the club says, because we're going to have debt to service. Yeah. And it's 4 years away, basically, or 3.5-4 years away. And prices should rise anyway through the nature of supply and not being able to satisfy demand. So, they're going to be high, Roger, aren't they? But they're probably going to be, I don't know, Paul, you could have a big spreadsheet, I suppose, and apply what Liverpool charged to our new stadium and see what it produces. But I think we'll still be affordable and low, in quotes, in comparison with those we aspire to compete with. But compared to what they are now, they're going to be significantly higher.
So match day income currently at Goodison, well, not currently, but, you know, when 38,000-39,000 people could go and corporate hospitality, what's our match day income?
14. Well, last full year, it was 14.2 million.
Yeah, if we have a European year, it maybe drifts up to 20-ish. Yeah.
So per match, we're still less than £1 million a game, obviously, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that includes spend on beer and scouse pies and everything, yeah?
Well, all that's outsourced, don't forget. So it doesn't really matter whether anybody buys a pint or not. It doesn't really affect the club, but it affects the organisation that it's outsourced to, obviously.
So is there a plan anywhere that anyone's seen for life within the new world of Bramley Moor, showing that we will make £2.5 million every home game, £3 million, £4 million? Anybody seen anything like that?
I don't think it's reasonable to expect the club to...
It's too early.
Stage to put it out. I mean, my own calculation.
What could we expect?
Okay, so my own calculation.
Paul did a mega blog on this, Roger, ages ago.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to remind our listeners.
Okay, beg your pardon. You know, yeah, that's why you're the host and I'm not. I'll shut up.
All right. If using John's figure of a 50% increase across the board for general admissions, so that means season ticket holders and walk-ups, that would effectively take us from 14 million total currently at Goodison Park to around about sort of 28, 29 million, depending upon how many games we played, possibly 30 games. This is 30 million. This is not including European football. This is just if we have a couple of Carabao Cup and a couple of FA Cup games. So that's
a ticket price rise plus a capacity increase, because obviously a 50% increase on 14 doesn't take us to 28, but there's a capacity increase.
And then that's just the general admission. So in terms of general admission, there's going to be 43,800 seats.
Nice.
And then you've got, according to the planning application, 5,300 premium seats.
Yeah.
I estimate that they can be sold for, if every single one was sold, for around about £20 million a year.
Right.
But again, you know, I think there's a question mark over the ability to do that given the pandemic. But nevertheless, that's what you'd have to aim at. Box seats probably £2 million a year, and then the away seats, which would generate about £2.5 million a year. Add all of that up, you get to around about £52-53 million for a full season.
Okay, so sorry, that's going from 14 million currently to 52 million.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a game changer and a half, isn't it? That's a 3.5 times increase in match day revenue.
You have to take service and the debt off that then.
No, I get that.
And the cost of servicing a presumably a bigger stadium in the sense of maintenance and staff and so
on. Costs and more.
How much end up in the bottom right hand corner is? Did you do that, Paul? How much ends up?
That's an interesting point, John, because actually a modern stadium should be cheaper to run than
Goodison. It should be. Yeah.
And so I don't.
But it is physically larger, so there'll be more stewards, more lounges, more executive boxes to look after. It all means more people, doesn't it?
Yeah, again, but you know, what hasn't been determined, for example, with the executive boxes, whether that's a direct cost to Everton or again whether we outsource. So,
true. Yeah.
We don't yet know on that. Look, I think if you take sort of just take 50 million for argument's sake, if you add on £10 million in naming rights, which is at the lower end of the scale, you're up to £60 million against £14 million. So there's what, 35 million increase. If we borrow 350 million at 5%, that's £17 million in interest costs. So we're probably 18 to £20 million a year better off for having Bramley Moor than staying at Goodison, which is obviously not a viable proposition. So the average supporter paying 50% more and having three times the number of premium seats would generate 18 to 20 million. And if we get into European football, considerably more, because we would play more games. And we would charge more for European games as well, obviously.
Yeah, I was going to say that's when you get into what we do for those premium games and how bold we will be down the track on how many season ticket holders we have, which fundamentally over time has become perceived as a discounted ticket. So it's the balance and act between certainty of money through the door, isn't it?
Well, so again, in terms of you know, what the club have said, what's in the planning application, the club will seek to have the maximum number of season tickets permitted given
that's
capacity.
Good. Yeah, I never saw that bit. Missed that. Yeah. Okay. And that'll be 40,000 then, won't it?
Well, it'll be sort of 85-90% of 43,000,
And then there's the occasional non-footballing event in an iconic stadium on the banks of the Royal Blue Mersey. That might...
The planning application allows for four major events a year that are non-footballing. So however much you can generate, who knows what you can generate from them. I've never done those figures.
Paul, can I just refresh there? Because I thought we were going from 14 to 50-something, and then you said the increase was, in fact, only 20 million. Why was it only 20?
Servicing the debt.
Oh, servicing the debt. Okay, right, yes. Okay.
So the increase will
be... income goes up, but obviously there's a much higher running cost.
Turnover will go up, yes.
So it'll go up around about 35 million, maybe a little bit more. If we borrow 350,000 at 5%, that's 17.5 million a year in interest costs.
350 so million.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Right.
Sorry, that was like, well, whatever it was, 15 to 20 minutes that I think span off. So if we get planning, will we start building it in the summer? And I think that we did a long-winded way of saying yes, didn't we?
Well, I think the consensus was we would, because we would start even if the finance wasn't fully in place. But that
all the finance,
mean,
yeah.
Yeah, that would mean that Langs were convinced that we were going to have the finance in place. And the naming rights. I mean, I suspect that if I'm paraphrasing here, Paul, do contradict me, but I suspect what we're saying is the likely time frame is that we will get the planning permission. It won't be called in. We might see Bill with a hard hat on in maybe May.
Yeah.
And actually we will have, you know, 120 million naming rights deal announced with USM Megaphone diddly doodah. And Farhad will be, you know, just writing a cheque for 100 million. And the financing may yet be signed off, but we will start work before it is. Would that be a correct timeline?
Yes. Although just on that last bit, you know, there would have to be some considerable comfort for the contractors that all the financing would be in place.
And that's the point, I think, Roger, that these things are they're linked and interlinked, aren't they? You want a fixed price, per se, out of a construction company, but they want confirmation that you actually can afford
to
pay the bill when it comes. Yeah. And we can distill what the detailed stuff Paul just did down to, in my very simplistic view of the world, that and maybe it's for the audience or the listeners to reflect upon. Everything Paul said about all those numbers that came out was a broad assumption that ticket prices across the board go up by 50%, yeah, and very high, well, I say very high, and on average £4,000, £5,000, whatever it is, per seat in the 5,500 of hospitality. And that allows us to service the debt and have a few bob left over, presumably to put assets on the field or whatever. Yeah. If any of those numbers we've just spun out turn out to be excessive in the sense of we can't get 5K a premium seat because of whatever, or we choose not to inflate the rank and file fan with a 50% ticket rise, then the gaps start to narrow, and you do need to have a big enough gap to allow for the unknown. So I think we end up with the view, which is where I'm distilling down to, is yes, ticket prices are going to rise significantly because the numbers suggest they have to. And whatever profit from going into the new stadium does get kicked out at the other end could equal whatever we manage to extract from the prawn sandwich brigade.
Yeah, okay.
What I would say, sorry, Roger, what
yeah, carry
I
on
would
for.
Say on all of this is that the footballing side of the business can't get away with a free ride here.
Oh, crikey. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You're not suggesting it has, are you?
I am.
When you talk about the footballing side of the business, who's in charge of that?
Marcel Brands and Carlo Ancelotti.
At the moment, Mr. Blaine, are you suggesting a change?
Well, if you want to have a side bet with me that both of them are still working for us when we get into the new stadium, then I'll happily take it, because history tells us whilst one of them, the director of football, might still be here, the manager probably won't be.
But the point I'm going to make is that these are the baseline figures. If you throw in European football,
yeah,
and regular European football, and in particular Champions League football, whether there's a Super League or not by that time, because there could well be a Super League in the season that we go into Bramley Moor, don't forget, then these figures get, you know, the gearing effect of European football is enormous, because these figures will just expand exponentially. They'll just go up.
Yeah,
you know, if we can get 10 home European games a season, for example, they go up by, these figures go up by 50%. So that's, you know, and that all almost all goes down to the bottom line.
Absolutely, yeah, because all the costs of running the goddamn place are already in the base deal, aren't they, Premier League fundamentally.
And then if affordability is an issue for the club, if we succeed on the pitch, it gives us the opportunity to reduce the burden on the ordinary fan.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, I understand, well, most of the arguments about supply and demand, but I also understand elasticity. And I think, you know, but first of all, elasticity, but secondly, in terms of the club and the way the club positions itself, European football gives the club a little bit more wriggle room to make the burden less.
Yes. And in some respects, Paul, I mean, I totally agree with what you say there. That's why the next 2 to 3 years on the field becomes critical, because what, you know, a year out or whatever it's going to be from the stadium being ready to host Premier League games, they're going to have clear views on season ticket renewals, if nothing else, what the pricing strategy is going to be. And they can do all the consultation they want, but at the end of the day, there's going to be a man with a spreadsheet saying it needs to be that. But if we've been in Europe for two or three consecutive years, and maybe, hey, wouldn't it be great if it was the Champions League? Then, as you rightly say, it allows more wriggle room on what affordability means.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it could equally be a lady with the spreadsheet, but I think the point is still valid. The point is still valid.
Non-gender specific, yeah.
Indeed. But the point is, if you're flogging corporate boxes, you want to be flogging corporate boxes to an attractive team that's successful and competing at the highest level. And you're absolutely right, too.
There's a whole host of stuff that could be done, Roger. I mean, you know, I've been an advocate for many a long year, back to Elston and days and ages ago, you know, about multi-year season tickets. No doubt there'll be some debenture type stuff around some of these boxes and hospitality places. Get the cash in now and people buy them for 5 years or something, or 10 years. But, you know, I'd certainly buy a multi-year season ticket, and that requires you to have a really good handle on what you think you should charge for it. So, yeah, great opportunity for commercial innovation, which is something, of course, we're renowned for.
Yeah, it is. Final thing for you, Paul.
Yeah. Just continuing this, because it links into so much that we've talked about over the last sort of 3.5, nearly 4 years now, is that this type of discussion about the club performing, first of all, to get the planning application performing in terms of what the design is, etc., has to be extended across the boardroom in terms of performing on the pitch and performing in every sense across the whole club. This is an incredible opportunity, as you quite rightly say. It's brought about through Mashiri's generosity. I'm sure he has a business plan to benefit from this, but nevertheless, it is generous. It would be very remiss of the club, in fact, it would be disastrous of the club, not to take the maximum benefits from the opportunities that are currently being presented it.
100%.
The question is whether or not anybody sits on the board and asks those questions, and I still wonder whether they do.
We do wonder it. Was that your final point, or do you have another final point?
No, I think I'll leave that.
I think it's a good point to leave. John, and you've done a nice little summary for us earlier. Do you have anything to conclude? Because if not, I'm going to throw a quick question at you.
Yeah, just one more thing, I guess. Buried in Paul's observation then was something which was akin to, almost a positive recognition that we appear to have run this, albeit in my own view, it's perhaps taken a bit longer than it might have taken. The journey to this, to where we've got to from the stadium perspective, planning applications, consultations, lobbying, all that good stuff, seems to have been done well. And therefore, we should do some of those things that we haven't done well in the past well, because we're sort of proven we can do it. It's like a footballer. You can't just have one good game and then two or three bad games. You've got to have five good games in a row and keep doing it. And so a step up in commercial performance to enable all this is mandatory, not optional.
Agreed. Thank you. Thank you, Paul, for your time. Look, hopefully today we've given fans and listeners an accurate and balanced view of the timeline and recognise the significant progress that's been made. John's absolutely right. They've run a great campaign selling this to the council and to the people of Liverpool and the wider Liverpool City region to get that outstanding level of support to make approval, planning approval, and overcoming these objections, which Paul, again, is right to say, are still there from World Heritage and UNESCO and the Victorian brothers. But, you know, frankly, this is where the hard work begins. And we should never, ever lose sight of the unbridled and totally almost unmerited generosity that Farhad Mashiri, the amount of money he's poured into our football club, and every single person on the payroll of Everton Football Club should be held to account. Everybody needs to be raising their bar, whether it's in the commercial team, whether it's on the playing side, whether it's on the marketing side, whether it's on the stadium management project organisational side. Everybody now needs to up their game, because this is the opportunity. This is the open window that Farhad talked about when he first arrived. And he's had to prise it open, he's had to lever it open, he's had to throw more money at it than he ever thought necessary. But he is going to give us an opportunity, the opportunity of a generation, maybe of a lifetime, maybe of a century, to capitalise on a new stadium and to re-establish Everton Football Club competing at the highest level domestically and internationally. And as fans, we should applaud that. We should be grateful. But as fans, we need to hold everyone from Carlo Ancelotti and Marcel Brands and Richarlison and James Rodriguez and Mason Holgate and David Unsworth and Denise Barrett-Baxendale and Sasha Ryzantsev to account, because everybody needs to step up now and grasp this opportunity that Farhad Moshiri has given us. Because as we know, it's not what you do, it's the way that you do it. That's what gets results. Up the toffees, let's put 5 past City tonight. Thank you very much. Listen, next time, Everton Business Matters.